This is a continuation of an interview with Jeanette Baum on May 14th, 2003. We're going to talk more about the origins of the new Grand Ronde Hospital.
Well, it was back in 1962 that there was a lot of pressure put on David to establish a new hospital and to save the hospital that had been the Grand Ronde Hospital from, although it was going to be demolished, they needed a substitute.
Was the pressure put on him because of his status as a legislator?
No, his ability to accomplish what needed to be done. He had the reputation for being able to accomplish.
Organize a large community effort?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And that's exactly what he did. He got a board together of men that felt the same way, that we needed to maintain the hospital. Mm-hmm. And he chose men that were activists also, and took a very active part in raising money, mm-hmm. which was the big thing.
Do you remember what the initial target was?
$500,000.
Only?
$500,000. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. For the first edition.
Mm-hmm. And who was the do you remember who was the architect?
Newton, I believe, was his name.
From Portland?
Uh-huh, from Portland. Mm-hmm. I don't remember his first name. I know he was very popular with the people here and liked what he did.
Do you think that there might have been a competition among architects for preliminary designs and then choose the best?
No, I don't recall that. I don't know how they chose the architect. Mm-hmm.
Tell me then about site selection.
Well, there were many places that he could have put the hospital. Some might have been better than where he chose, but one of his influences was the fact that he felt that a hospital should be where they could see children in the playgrounds and the schools below, and that this
for
was
the
a
mental health of the patients. Do you
yes,
think?
A restoration of life,
yes,
and
yes.
And so that was one of the things that helped. Another thing that helped was, there was a gentleman by the name of Earl Miller that had raised a large family, and they were a family that struggled financially, and they had all this land here where he had his dairy, mm-hmm. and so I think he decided that Earl needed a little change of lifestyle. And so he started in with him, and they bought property piece by piece as they needed it, and came clear over to Hawthorne Drive, which is the street that goes up, forked out from Model Air. Mm-hmm. You turn off on Model Air, and mm-hmm. the right-hand fork is Hawthorne. Mm-hmm. And he eventually purchased the whole thing clear over there. And
surely the hospital wouldn't need that much land, would it?
Well, he had the idea that there would be a hospital campus and doctor's offices and a pharmacy, and which they did have. Mm-hmm. And there are doctor's offices
yes.
up there,
mm-hmm.
and then parking space. And
it's still room for future expansion, I gather.
Well, that's true. They would have some. Of course, lots of people felt that it should have been out on Getter Lane, mm-hmm. Flat territory. But this just seemed logical to him at the time. Also, George Decker had a piece of the property on the north side, and they needed that, and George sold that to them too. So there were these two parties involved in the sale.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take then to raise the $500,000?
They had 4 years.
Oh, four.
Yes. Mm. And
what were some of the activities that you were aware of for money raising?
Well, I think the generosity of the community was the big thing. And the railroad, Boise Cascade, the large industries mm-hmm. gave generously. Mm-hmm. And then the Hill Burton funds came on the scene.
Federal government.
Uh huh.
Yes.
And they were able to get a sizable sum from them. But there was a man by the name of Gale Beals who had retired as the CEO of Boise Cascade here. And he was very interested in getting this hospital. And so he went, he did the campaign for a fundraising, very successful. And it just was kind of caught, it caught hold and went forward. And I was surprised at the money that did pour in from this community.
How was that, I don't want to go into too much detail on the finances of it, but there is an endowment fund now, isn't there?
Well, now, I'm not sure about that. Probably somebody on the board could clue you
well,
in.
We get the newsletter, and I think I've seen that there is an endowment.
Uh-huh.
I suppose at the time, though, it was just raising funds specifically to pay the architect and to buy the land and
uh-huh.
to start the construction.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right. And they finally got the first part of the hospital up in 1966,
Is that
January.
The part that we see when we first drive in now?
Mm-hmm. It's the first part that is the closest to the valley.
Right.
Uh-huh, it's,
and where the present information desk and gift shop.
Let's see,
are.
What would, no, it's the part that has the physical therapy and the, and of course right underneath it was the kitchen and the OB, and then they had the surgery center and, it's been quite a long while ago, and you kind of forget.
Uh-huh.
They have a marvelous history on this.
I've seen that.
In the book. Mm-hmm. There's a book.
Yes.
That really.
And I shouldn't ask you anything that's already in the book, of course.
Well, it's so accurate.
Yeah, it is.
Uh-huh.
Yes. But more from the standpoint of your involvement and awareness of what
mm-hmm.
was going on at the time.
Well, perhaps when you've got a very, very busy husband. Lots goes on that you never know about.
Yes.
And
were you directly involved in some way?
I was helped form the auxiliary.
From the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. By 64, we had an auxiliary.
Had there been any sort of predecessor of that at the old Grand Ronde Hospital?
No, there was nothing there. Mm. This was something new, and David asked Jerry. Brasseth Palmer to head that up,
mm-hmm.
and she was president for 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and I took over the secretary treasurer's mm-hmm. spot.
What was your understanding at the time of what the auxiliary needed to do?
Well, it was ambassadors for the hospital and help with the minor things that occur in the hospital, maybe delivering flowers, mm-hmm. perhaps keeping the patients, visiting with the patient,
mm-hmm.
and now that's developed into quite a bit more than that. But at that time, it was more just a friendly organization for the hospital.
Was it to be made up entirely of women?
Yes, at that time. There were no men. Now there are,
mm-hmm.
and I believe they have, I'm not just sure, but around three men, I think.
And from the start, was it made up of women who were older and retired, or were there some younger?
Well, this would be in 62, and in 62 I was 40. So they were
obviously not, but
yes,
those are retired.
Yes. And this was the age that was involved in this.
Uh-huh.
It was there were a few of the older ladies. Veda Fallow was probably in her 60s,
mm-hmm.
and Edith Scott, another lady that was older,
mm-hmm.
but the majority of us
mm-hmm.
were, I would say, 40s mm-hmm. and late 30s. Uh-huh.
When you asked someone to, or invited someone to join, mm-hmm. what reasons did you give for their being prospective
yes.
members?
Well, to further the hospital, to help in any way we possibly could with putting forth a good image of the hospital. And, of course, in the start, there's always lots of little problems.
Mm-hmm.
And you just be supportive and try to calm any criticism that comes forth. And but we...
Was there some possible fear that the hospital wouldn't succeed?
Not where Dave Baum was concerned. He knew it would succeed. And he, at the time of his death, he was just completing the third addition to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And
when did he die?
1977.
So the hospital was 15 years old then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or almost 15. You said he started started the campaign in 62.
62. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And the hospital was the first unit went up in about
64.
64?
Wait a minute. No, 66.
66, yeah.
Uh-huh, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second unit went up in 68. And then the third unit went up in 1972 or three of them.
Was he equally involved in the fundraising for all three units?
Was he?
Yes.
Oh, definitely.
Yes. He's still heading it.
Well, Gail Beals stayed around quite a long while before he went to live in Palm Springs.
Sure.
But Dave never quit trying to raise funds for the hospital. And he had established a foundation. And the foundation was headed by Ross Hearing. And
he'd been an accountant, hadn't he? Or was he an attorney?
Lawyer. Uh-huh.
Attorney, yeah.
Yes, an attorney.
That's right.
And just then the board would change some. Some of the board members were older, they passed away, and mm-hmm. they would substitute
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. try to get men that mm-hmm. were active men.
Sure.
You didn't want anybody on the board that just came to sit in the chair.
And you've remained active with the auxiliary until the present.
Correct. Uh-huh.
What have been the satisfactions over the years besides knowing that the auxiliary is needed to keep uh-huh. things going there?
Well, one of the satisfactions is, are the friends that I've made.
Mm-hmm.
And the esprit de corps we enjoy. And I look forward to going up every Tuesday and serving from 12:30 to 5 o'clock mm-hmm. on the information desk.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I have worked in the gift shop and operated the juice cart and done many things,
mm-hmm.
but right now I pretty much just do the information desk.
And is there any question you can't answer?
About the hospital?
Well, whatever people ask.
Oh yes, but you can always find out. Lots of times I go down to the office and tell them what the problem is,
mm-hmm.
and they know. And you learn all the time.
Right.
And there's new problems and new questions.
Mm-hmm.
And someone will come in with a big load of freight yesterday. And I didn't exactly know where he was to take that freight. But we found out.
Mm-hmm.
And
what sort of training program has there been for new people who become part of the auxiliary?
Well, right now we have who is heading up the training program.
Mm-hmm.
for the desk particularly.
Mm-hmm.
And her name is Mary Tolles, and an applicant comes in, and they fill out a little form, and then if everything is satisfactory, they also have to have a TB test and make sure that they're healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And then she trains this particular division, the desk, and they work with her for a while, and then they will take over a, mm-hmm. a spot.
Mm-hmm.
And now I don't know about I think there might be people training in the gift shop who it could be one of the schedulers who trains the gift shop, and because there's a little adding machine type of equipment there that you have to know just what
sure.
buttons to push.
I know that the St. Joe's Hospital went out of existence, what, about 1972,
mm-hmm.
early 70s anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any sort of strain or difficulty when the two hospitals were operating in competition?
Well, I would say that there probably was, and the very fact that good, strong Catholic doctors wanted to see the Catholic hospital stay in operation,
mm-hmm.
and others that were not Catholic that enjoyed the sisters and the mm-hmm. wonderful aid and help they gave, but Le Grand has always had two hospitals, and even back when Phi had the hospital over at Hot Lake, and they just think it's healthy to have two hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Of course, and it doesn't now.
That's right. That's right. They they turned over most of their equipment to the Grand Ron, and I believe it was a generous donation
mm-hmm.
from the Catholic Hospital.
By the way, this is just a kind of a footnote, but today I was listening to an interview with Donna Sands,
mm-hmm.
and she's younger than we are, of course, but she said that she was born in the Wunderlich Hospital, and until recently she didn't know where the Wunderlich Hospital was in Le Grand, but she had someone told her it was upstairs above the former Trocadero restaurant.
Oh, that's something new to me.
You didn't?
I've never heard,
never
of
heard
it.
That.
No,
mm-hmm.
I never heard of it. And often back in those days, the 20s, and doctors had a special building that they did deliver their babies in.
Apparently, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, she was born in 1932, I think.
Uh-huh. And I know...
this was before you were in Le Grand also, of course.
Right, it
I thought maybe in talk about hospitals in Le Grand, you might have heard of that.
Never picked up on that.
But you did hear about several doctors who had places where they would do maybe some forms of surgery and deliver babies, right, in offices?
Here in Le Grand?
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking more or less about where I was born in 1919. At that time, I was delivered by my mother, of course, in our home.
Yes.
And then, more in the 20s, Dr. McMurdo, who delivered me over in Hempner, had his little house, a little building he'd just made a small hospital out of. And mm-hmm. babies were delivered there.
Mm-hmm.
Appendicitis, appendix were removed. Then maybe they'd get another little building that was a little better than that one. And
but all the time you've been in Le Grand, you haven't heard of such
no,
facilities?
No, not in Le Grand.
In either the St. Joe's or the Grand Ron, former Grand Ron, old hospital.
But you must remember I wasn't here in the 20s
right.
or the 30s
mm-hmm.
or the early
yeah.
40s.
Right.
I wasn't here till 47.
Mm-hmm. I just thought since you were fairly close to the medical community for one reason or another in Le Grand, you might have heard of them.
Oh, yes. I don't think I ever did. What did you say the name of that place was?
Wunderlich.
Wunderlich. Isn't that something?
It's If we could find a LaGrande city directory for that period, we could probably look it up.
Well, the Family History Library might have one.
Right.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. They have quite a catalog.
Yes.
Of
yes.
Phone directories.
Mm-hmm.
Just depends on how far back they go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anything else you recall about the origins of the new Grand Ronde Hospital that you think is notable?
Well, I just know that originally Dr. Gilstrap and Lee Johnson were very active in helping with the transfer. And Dr. Gilstrap was generous in his contribution to the furtherance of the hospital. And they also came up with that beautiful clock, which had been in the old hospital.
The grandfather style, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Dr. Richardson had given,
mm-hmm.
had left that there in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
The story was that it was quite large and too large. His wife didn't want it in their home,
mm-hmm.
so he put it in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Lee Johnson inherited it. And I believe he sold it to the hospital for $500, which was a buy. You bet. It's a beautiful thing,
mm-hmm.
and still runs. And it's just one of those attractive things.
Yes.
And, of course, you go to the hospital, and you see some of these beautiful sculptures that are in the hospital now, in the lobby of the hospital. And there's attractions almost
mm-hmm.
like you find in the museum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are there stories of any historical interest about those sculptures, or did they come from outside Union County?
Well, I believe he was from Wallawa Enterprise, Joseph, up in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Now, I should know exactly about that, but I'm not just sure, even his name,
mm-hmm.
but somebody else can clue you in on
oh,
that.
Oh, yes. And there's probably a sign on it, too.
No doubt.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's got a third one that's going to go up pretty soon in the lobby.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be three of them.
Shall we switch over to PEO?
Yes.
Has this been an organization you belong to for most of your adult life?
Well, since 1964.
Mm-hmm.
I joined the Chapter DK in 1964.
Had there been PEO here previously?
Mm-hmm. There was a chapter, originally called Chapter I, and I believe that was back in the 20s, although some of the sisters of I would know more accurately about that. And then another chapter evolved, CO, so that was the second chapter. And then they discovered that they could have a third chapter. So our chapter was formed. And I think it was formed in 1962.
Mm-hmm. What would you say, for most women, is the appeal of belonging to PEO?
Well, I think the fact that it's scholarships for women, and they see a great need for women having help with their education.
Has that always been the major purpose?
Yes. That plus the fact that we own a college.
No,
we own a college called Cotty. It's in Nevada, Missouri. And it was a college that was owned by one of our PEO sisters, and she donated it to the to PEO.
Mm-hmm.
And part of our yearly donations, a goodly sum goes to Cotty. And of course you stop and think of how many chapters there are here in Oregon. We have about 150 chapters
mm-hmm.
right here in Oregon. So throughout the United States,
mm-hmm.
this is a nice sum of money that goes to support PEO.
Now, I've never heard of that college before. What makes it special besides the fact that PEO owns it?
It's a girls' college.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it quite special. And it's a college that is into the arts and music and
how do you spell the name?
Cotty, Cotty, and it's in Nevada, Missouri, and that's spelled just like Nevada.
Amazing.
Uh huh.
Right.
And it's I'm not sure of the enrollment right now, but I just would guess it's around 1,000.
When you say arts, do you mean fine arts?
Yes.
Music, painting, mm-hmm. sculpture,
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing?
I believe so.
Mm-hmm.
There's people that have gone to Cotty here in our town. Dara Decker is one of them, and Natalie Carey is another. And they went from the Grand.
Mm-hmm.
And Dara Decker could give you lots mm-hmm. of help with anything.
The scholarship program that PEO sponsors isn't limited, though, to that college. Is that correct?
No. No, it's not. It's not. In fact, we have a scholarship that is for women coming back into the educational process.
Mm-hmm.
And if they've had a couple of years and all of a sudden they want to come back, they can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have about 5 different scholarships.
Do the women who get scholarships?
Pardon?
Do the women who get scholarships need to be members of PEO?
No. No, in fact, we've had women who are members of PEO who have been turned down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But...
Are the women who are selected multiracial?
Yes, uh-huh, they are. And
how do they apply?
Well, we have an educational chairman for each mm-hmm. group,
mm-hmm.
and this educational chairman is the promoter, and we try to be aware as members of who might be needful,
mm-hmm.
and it is based quite a bit on need. And we have a scholarship up here at Eastern. Our the 3 chapters get together and
mm-hmm.
give a yearly scholarship.
It sounds as though these might be full scholarships for tuition and room and board, especially
well,
if the women are needy.
Generally, it's a sum of money that's given for them to use.
But would it be large enough so that they could pay nearly all of their expenses
for a year
or more?
Maybe. Well, I think... the highest one that I've ever known of is $7,500, I believe.
Mm-hmm. That's not enough for many
uh-huh.
colleges, anyway.
No, but it's a help.
Oh, yeah.
And lots of times it's the difference mm-hmm. between... And lots of times we'll have a girl who's got a scholarship going up here at Eastern, and we'll discover that she is in need of some books that she can't afford to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And we come up with the money to buy those books.
Now, is this the primary or only purpose of PEO?
Well, we have a philanthropic in the children's schools, particularly say wherever our members are acquainted with the grade schools, if there's some child that needs something.
Mm-hmm.
So we have money set aside just for philanthropic.
Mm-hmm. Could that be for males as well as females?
Uh-huh, for any child,
mm-hmm.
you bet.
Mm-hmm. And what have historically been the principal means for raising the money for these philanthropic and educational purposes?
Well, we have a very nice November affair. It's called the PEO... And this is our chapter, DK's chapter. It's a tea with a silent auction and with an open auction, and then a bazaar. And we do very well with that.
Has that been a typical PEO activity for most of the 20th century?
Well, we find that it's the best money-making project.
I'm
we can
just
come
wondering,
up with right now.
In the early, you said there were chapters, or at least one chapter in LeGrand in
uh-huh.
the 1920s. Do you have any idea whether they were doing a similar thing to raise money?
Well, I think they, a lot of them gave a luncheon to make their money. Mm-hmm. And others had little, maybe they'd bring some choice thing from their home, and they'd have an inter-chapter auction and raise their money that way. But ours is on quite a different scale. We have had some, for the oral auction, we had tickets for the Super Bowl game and two nights at a hotel down there. And another thing we had was there's a lovely resort area up in Coeur d'Alene, the Coeur d'Alene mm-hmm. resort area. And we had two nights there. And
would it be true to say that, at least in Union County, and I don't know whether there are PO organizations in other parts of Union County, are they all in the Grand?
Oh, no, we've got over 100, we've got 100, 150 just in Oregon alone.
But I mean Union County.
In Union County, well, we had, Enterprise has one. Let's see. No, the Grand's the only one.
Okay, would it be true, this is what I started to say, would it be true to say that the women who become members of PEO are among the more socially prominent women of La Grande and Union County?
No, I don't think so. We've got some young women in their 20s, and they aren't socially prominent.
Can anyone join then, any woman?
No, you have to be invited.
Well, all right, so that tells me something.
Yes.
How do you get an invitation?
How would you get an invitation? Well, you might know a PEO, and she might manifest an interest. Sometimes, too, you see some person that's very active in the community. Maybe they would like to be a PEO. Mm-hmm. They have the choice. Mm-hmm. We can extend them an invitation. Mm-hmm. And they have the choice of accepting.
Well, as soon as you say women who are very active in the community, that suggests to me that you need to be prominent in some way.
Well, we've got a president of our group right now, and I don't think you would know her name if I said it, because she's lives on a farm, and she has children, and she's never been particularly active on a grand scale. The thing of it is, she's a highly intelligent girl, mm-hmm. and has done a wonderful job as being president of our chapter.
What can you tell me about other social organizations, particularly organizations that are primarily women or entirely women?
Well, I think the Seroptimists are entirely women.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think Beta Sigma Phi. Mm-hmm. is entirely women.
Well, go back as far as you can in the period of the 40s and 50s when you were here.
Yeah.
What were some of your observations then about social organizations for women?
Well, there was Epsilon Sigma Alpha back in the 40s. And it's still in existence today, I believe. But I moved on into PEO. Mm-hmm. And
was Epsilon Sigma Alpha purely social sorority?
Well, it was a service group, mm-hmm. and we had lots of service projects. In order to make money, I can remember we put on a big reception for a local lady here in town whose son got married. I remember, and our money went to good causes. It could be a scholarship, it could be a needful thing. Mm-hmm. But as far as knowing the organizations, I didn't come here until 47. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have a really good recall on what was here in the 20s.
No, of course not. But you do have
30s.
A little over 50 years worth of perspective on
well, that's true.
Life in this county.
Yes.
Were you aware of the organizations tied to the Masons and the Elks and the IOOF,
well,
the Rebeccas?
I was, and my husband was a Mason. He was a Shriner, I guess you'd say.
Mm-hmm.
But I never, I had children I was rearing, and I could only, I just never joined the Rebeccas or what's the other thing?
Eastern Star.
Eastern Star, and then there's one more, Nile.
Oh, yes. Daughters of the Nile.
Daughters of the Nile, uh-huh. And I know they're very, very active groups.
Mm-hmm. What did you think they were doing?
What I think they were doing?
Yes. I've asked other women who were members of organizations like Eastern Star, and they couldn't tell me much of anything about what they did.
Well, I think they enjoy a ritual. But I've not been a member, so I don't know. But that's the thing I see there is, mm-hmm. is lots of people do like. A ritual, I guess.
Why do you think they enjoy participating in those sorts
things
of
like
rituals?
That?
They're quasi-religious, I suppose you might say. They aren't really religious, not in the conventional sense anyway, I think.
Yeah.
What might they get from that, doing that kind of thing? Besides having an excuse to dress up, I imagine that's part of it.
Well, I do know that I've always thought of it as putting their youth forward, the young ladies forward in their dress and in their manners and perhaps building their esteem. But you'd have to ask somebody that
mm-hmm.
belongs.
Mm-hmm.
I have, as I said, and I
haven't gotten a very good answer.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if, particularly with the younger women, it would be a little bit like debutantes among the very wealthy. Would it be a kind of an imitation of what the wealthy used to do with their young women, especially?
Yeah. I just, like a coming out party?
Yes.
Yes. Well, I do know there's a young girl that is chosen to be, what do they call her?
A princess or a queen?
Something like that. I know she, and that's quite a feather in her cap.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I've never been involved in it, so I'm really not the one to ask about this.
No. Uh-huh. I was guessing that you might have talked to enough other people
uh-huh.
in Le Grand to get some inkling.
Well, I just haven't.
All right.
It's too bad not to be a little more curious, isn't it? Something happened to my curiosity.
No, I've noticed that's happened to a good many people.
Yes.
Maybe because they're paying attention to the busy parts of their lives. And
raising children.
Yes, and so their consciousness is so directed toward what they must do and what's mm-hmm. most important to them that they don't observe a lot of other aspects of life.
You just cut that out of your life.
Yes,
it's something you don't have time for.
Response.
So you don't inquire about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in a way, is too bad because I have lots of friends that are in that group.
Yes.
And one of them, a friend of mine from out of the city, who lived in Salem, wanted me to become a daughter of the Nile.
Uh-huh.
But I was just so busy with children.
Yes.
And taking care of a husband,
sure.
a very active husband,
mm-hmm.
trying to hold the family
mm-hmm.
together.
Mm-hmm. And that is a large house at that.
Yes, it was a terrific large house, and sometimes there has to be the glue to
it. Let's switch over to your own and your family's involvement in politics.
Mm-hmm.
David was a state mm-hmm. legislator.
Yes, he was.
Legislator,
uh-huh.
and
yeah.
Ray also.
Uh-huh.
Anybody else active in politics?
Well, his father was a county commissioner
hmm.
and enjoyed that. I think he was a county commissioner for about 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then he grew old and I think he actually lost the race, but it was time. Mm-hmm. He should have retired. And
so from your experience, mm-hmm. What is involved in getting a legislative campaign going and completed in Union County?
Well, I tell you, if you really want to get a good start, you need to be a local boy, first and foremost.
Mm-hmm. Because name recognition is so important.
Uh-huh.
And I suppose trust, too.
Yes.
Which you can establish if you've been here a longer time.
I think that's very true. The solid reputation that mm-hmm. the candidate has.
Yes.
And, of course, in this area, we're not just Union County. We're Wallawa, and we're part of Umatilla.
I mean, as far as the state office is concerned.
And part of the House of Representatives.
Certainly.
The State House mm-hmm. of Representatives. Mm-hmm. So it requires the whole family involvement, and we would go with Ray into various areas.
Before you started the campaign itself, were there family councils about whether he should run and for what office?
Well, let's take Ray for instance. Mm-hmm. Ever since he was in high school, he was always thrust into a leadership position. He didn't particularly seek it, but he didn't want to be president of the senior class, and yet they elected him president of the senior class.
Over his protests. So.
Yes. Then he went off to school, college, and one summer he decided it would be nice to apply for an internship in Mark Hatfield's office. And he enjoyed that very much. Mm-hmm. And prior to that time, he had been working in the Attorney General's office out of law school, when he was in law school. And he saw the state legislature operating and visited there a lot. And I think he decided that he would like to try that. And that's sort of the springboard for all of this was his working with his father's involvement, plus the politicians that came to our home to visit, mm-hmm. like Mark Hatfield and his wife, mm-hmm. were with us one night to stay all night while they campaigned in the area. And Tom McCall was here, too. And we even had Warren Nunn, who was Mark Hatfield's administrative assistant, here with his wife and two daughters, I believe it was. And so he was exposed to this, and I think that decided him to give it a try when he was eligible.
Do you remember his announcing to other members of the family that he would like to try?
Well, it came on kind of gradually. Just the fact that he went back and served in Mark Hatfield's office as an intern. He talked about it then. He talked about it when he was in law school.
Nobody was surprised then in the family.
No, not a bit.
Said, I'm going to do this.
No, all we did was muster our resources. And the family, David, his brother went with him a lot. And one would take one side of the seat and one would take the other side. And so many people thought David was Ray, and they'd come out and say, "Oh, Ray, so good to see you." And Ray would be across the street.
Uh-huh. As far as mounting a campaign and getting out and meeting people were concerned, what would be the procedures to use in Union County?
Well, of course, you want the Republican Party here to back you. And make sure that that you are their candidate. And Bob Brusciotti held the office, and he was going to retire, and he also wanted Ray to run for the spot.
You mean held the office in the legislature?
Uh huh.
Yes.
Yes.
The seat that Ray would
would fill.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And so with Bob Brigiotti's urging and all of his interest through the years, he decided to make a run for it.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, as you know, you spent a lot of time circulating and visiting people. And
it was the 1980s he was doing this, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Early 80s?
84, I think it was.
How were you involved?
I was involved in going with him on a campaign and writing little notes on his door hanging thing where they wouldn't find people home. And I missed you.
Mm-hmm.
And we might know the party there. And we could always say, Mrs. Jones, you know. And I went with him to Milton Freewater because I lived in Milton Freewater, and mm-hmm. I thought it would be kind of nice to look up some old friends and help him in that regard. Mm-hmm. And
I'm sure he gave speeches in Union County.
What was that?
I'm sure he gave speeches in
Union
County.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Would these be in meeting halls or club various kinds of clubs,
whatever,
or organizations?
Wherever he was invited. It might be the Farm Bureau. It might be the Lions Club. Mm-hmm. It might be Rotary. Just any of the organizations
mm-hmm.
Would invite him to come and speak mm-hmm. to them.
Did you hear some of these talks?
Once in a while, I may have, but I didn't make it a point to go.
Mm-hmm. Was it customary, at least in the 1980s and maybe before, to have opposing candidates at the same meeting?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Very definitely. The Democrats and the Republicans would present their candidate, and I know there was many town hall meetings down at the Commons in the middle school
mm-hmm.
That I recall, and all the candidates were there, mm-hmm. even the candidates running for perhaps the United States Senate
mm-hmm.
might be there, and then they'd all get a 10-minute opportunity to mm-hmm. put their points and opinions across.
Mm-hmm. What sorts of reactions were you getting from people in LeGrand and wherever else you went in the county toward his candidacy? Not, I don't mean specifically the quality of him as a candidate, but how did people react to political candidates?
Well, we felt a great deal of support in Union County because he was born and reared here.
Mm-hmm.
And
how did people express that?
Well, donations to his campaign
mm-hmm.
and individual gatherings, a lot of homes would invite in their friends, and also when Senator Hatfield would come to town or some other dignitary, they'd schedule Ray in with him, and it might be the governor, it might be just whoever mm-hmm. happened to be on the scene. And one thing that we ran into was he was very well known in Union County, and his opponent was not. He was a man by the name of Buck Rogers, and he wasn't well known, but he had some good connections over Milton Freewater.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he rose
mm-hmm.
and shone, but he was never able to overcome his raised lead in Wallawa and Union County.
Mm-hmm. Could you make any observation during the 50 or 50 plus years you've been in Union County of the degree of participation and enthusiasm about politics that voters have? Have there been noteworthy changes?
Well, I do think it's subsided. It doesn't seem to me to be the activities that they used to have. and you go to quite a few activities to hear the candidates. And
usually those were well attended?
Yes, in the beginning. I don't know how much of an attendance they get now.
Well, I haven't been
attending lately.
Right. I'm just trying to get an impression of, especially in the earlier years and when Ray was active as a candidate.
Yes.
Whether it seemed to you that Union County residents generally were quite involved in politics.
Well, the Republican Party was very supportive, and I know they put on a wonderful Lincoln Day banquet. Ray was the speaker, and yet I saw a time when there was scarcely anybody that showed up. I've seen that too, and it's resulted in you going door to door. The politicians, Ray went door to door, and I don't know that any candidate had ever gone door to door in the counties here. But he went door to door through Wallowa, Union County, and over in Milton Freewater. And he took the family with us so that we'd go into a cul-de-sac neighborhood in Milton Freewater. And someone would take this side of the street and someone would take this other side. And we'd talk about Ray and tell him that he's running, and we'd say he's right down here. Wouldn't you like to meet him, you know? And you just get real folksy. And it's a lot of hard work. And he had a little girl at that time, little Mary. And little Mary liked to ride on his shoulders. And he'd go around door to door with Mary on his shoulders. And it's catchy things you do.
What reactions later did he have to door-to-door work?
Well, he went door-to-door the next time, too, because he ran against a very strong... Well, the first man he ran against was Judge Leroy Childers. And he had been the county judge in Wallowa for quite a while. And he had, naturally as county judge, he had created a lot of, as they do, animosity. And we ran into that a lot, quite a bit. And he did win that first victory quite handily. Then he ran against the second man, who wasn't known. And he was a very fine man, too. I don't think he's here now. I think he was a man that had lived here as a youth, then came back, and nobody knew him. But it takes a lot of hard work. I saw even Gordon Smith come into our area and go door to door. But he saw the success that Ray had had, and so did Russell West. Russ West went door to door, and these politicians all come in and talk to Ray about it, and he says door to door.
So he thinks he has solid evidence that's how you get votes.
Well, I know one time I was on a little gathering where there was some ladies from Wallowa County, and one lady didn't know who I was. And they were talking politics, and she said, "Well, I'm voting for Ray Baum. He came to my door and left me a note, but I wasn't home. But he did come to my door." So, how do you? Some people say it's not worth it, and then I think it is. I think it definitely is, particularly if someone invites you in. Yes, you get a chance to visit personally, and. And when they don't answer, you can leave a note on their door and have it all ready to go. And you just have to move it. You have to be swift.
Yeah.
When they're not home, well, you move right along. Yeah. But it's an interesting experience. Even his sister went on the campaign tours with him, and would take one side of the street and then call him over if someone was home and wanted to meet him. And I helped him that way too. But then the next time I didn't. I just decided I'd leave that to the young.
Yes.
To the youth.
And apparently you're not going to be called upon to do that again anyway.
No, I don't think so. I don't think Ray will ever again run for something like state politics. I don't think so.
Perhaps he has the idea that you shouldn't be a career politician.
No, oh definitely, he's so much, in fact he was becoming a career, you know, they were re-electing him and re-electing him, and there he was down for his fourth session, 8 years, you see, and then he felt he was neglecting his family, and he has a family of 6 children,
yes.
And he thought they were growing up without his full attention. He needed to be home. So that's the way his life has gone.